Okay, we are on chapter 5, page 64. If I remember correctly, I have given the alternative renderings in the glossary here for chapter 5. And also I gave alternative renderings for the glossary on page 75, 76. Did I give those alternative renderings? Okay, so let us, I think we're on, I have to do paragraph 3. Now, page 64, passage 3. Ah, one member of my poly class is in, either invisible or vanished. Is that it? Hui Chung.
She went to take care of one of her old friends.
Oh.
Who got sick.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So she left after lunch.
Oh, right after lunch, yeah. Oh, I didn't see her after lunch. Yeah. Okay, so let's take the verses, paragraph 3. These are some verses from Dhammapada. Apamadena bhagava devanang satatang gato. Apamadang pasang santi pamado garahito sada. Okay, in the first line, there's a reference to one Maghava. Maghava, this is the personal name of, or one of the names of Sakka, who is the king of the gods, also known as Indra. And this ending va here, it comes from that stem or suffix, the bunt suffix. Like we have on page 69, silava, silavant gives silava. So this verse is to explain how Sakka or Maghava became king of the gods. Okay, so upamadena, this is which case? Instrumental. It means by diligence, by heed, by diligence, heedfulness. Maghava, then you take this past participle in the second line, gatto. It means literally went to. But here, the sense is attained. Then, satatang. I'm not sure if they explain that form. Okay, but I'll just explain. Sata is an adjective which means best. Satata. This is the stem form. The ending ta is equivalent to our English nis or hood. Like Buddha ta would be Buddhahood. Arahat ta, arhat ship. Ship is another one. you all know shunyata, that's empty, plus ta, meaning this. Tatata, usually translated suchness, the word tata plus ta, meaning this. So here, satata, bestness or supremacy. Chiefdom, chiefship. And here, because it's functioning as an accusative, the object of gatto, so ta turns in, ta is a feminine type ending, so it's the accusative feminine, tongue. So putting the two lines together, by diligence, Maghava attained chiefdom or supremacy among the gods. He became the chief of the gods. Then Appamadam Pasangsanti. Pasangsanti is a verb. What person is it? Third person number, third person plural. There's no subject mentioned. So we just understand that it's people in general. So we say they praise diligence, but pamado means the opposite, negligence, heedlessness, carelessness. Heedlessness is always sada garahito. Garahito means blamed or criticized. Okay, we'll take the next stanza. Yatapi ruchi rang pupang vanavantang agandakang evang subasi tava cha apala hoti akupato. Okay, yatapi, it's just as ruchi rang, a beautiful pupang flower. Vanavantang, that means colorful, full of color. Vana is color. Sometimes even vana is beauty. You could say, just as a lovely flower, beautiful, but agandakam. Here the word ganda means scent or perfume. And gandaka is an adjective from having, means having perfume. Gandaka. But then it has the negative prefix, a, the initial letter A. That means not or without. So it's the lovely flower, beautiful or colorful, but without any scent, without any fragrance. Yeah. Evang, here, in the same way, Subhasita vacha. Subhasita is well-spoken, vacha, words. Just like this are the well-spoken words. Apalahoti akubato. Akubato means of one who does not practice or one who does not act. This is actually, do you know what form this is? It's a dative, genitive dative. Grammatically, that's the case. But I had in mind the actual grammatical form. I heard it close. Present participle is what it is. From karoti, to do, to act. So for one who does not act, another, or one who does not act in accordance with his well-spoken words, or for one who does not act as he speaks, the well-spoken words are apala. Here, pala means guo, fruit. So this is fruitless, apala. To say wu guo? Wu guo. Then yeah, I could translate the Dhammapada into Chinese and pick up individual words. No, I'm sure it's been translated many times, several times into Chinese. Excuse me? Oh. Okay, so for one who does not act or follow his own advice, their well-spoken words are fruitless. The next verse, just the opposite. Yatapi ruchi rang pupang vanavantang sagandakang evang subhasita vacha sapala hoti sakubato. Yeah, just like a lovely flower, beautiful or colorful, and sagandaka, with the scent, fragrance, you could say fragrant. Evang subhasita vacha. Just so are the well-spoken words fruitful, suppala hoti, sukubito, for one who acts accordingly. Actually, vacha, I said words, but it's a singular, feminine singular. You could say the speech. So the well-spoken speech, for one who acts, the well-spoken speech is fruitful, beneficial. Any questions about these two verses? Akubito. Actually, is probably more genitive than dative. Yeah. The thing is, you see, in this present participle, genitive and dative almost merge into one. So grammarians speak about dative genitive. Yeah, basically it's more genitive. Yeah.
But you were saying that it was for that person.
I think the way you interpret it is better, actually. Okay, in the first case, the well-spoken statement of one who does not act accordingly is fruitless. And in the second verse, the well-spoken word, the well-spoken statement of one who acts is fruitful. That's better sense, yeah. Okay, next verse. Diga jagarato rati digang santasa yojanam digo balanang sangsaro sadamang avijanatam. Okay, diga is an adjective meaning long, and it goes with rati. Rati is a noun meaning what? Night. So long is the night for one jagarato, for one who is awake. Again, this is a present participle. Again, genitive dative form. I think genitive is actually better because of the next, look at the next line. Digang santasa yojanang. Long is, yojana was a unit of measurement in India, of distance. It's, I think, roughly 7-8 miles. Okay, so long is the yojana santasa for one who is tired. And you see, that's clearly a genitive form, since it's a masculine singular genitive. So it seems best to take jagarato as genitive too. Digo balanam sangsaro. Long is sangsara, the round of rebirths, for the foolish people, for the deluded ones. Then the next line just continues, it qualifies balanam. So avijanatang is what part of speech, what case? Say again? No. It looks accusative, but I'll show you why it's not. Again, another? I would say plural genitive. Yeah, it's that genitive dative. And it's a present participle. So let's see where the present participle forms are. Okay, look on page 70. Now you look under, this is for the box of for gacchato. You see genitive, dative, plural. And you have the form gacchatang or gacchantanang. But the usual form in the older Pali would be gacchatang. So it, because it ends with ung, it looks like it's accusative, but that ung here is actually the genitive plural of the present participle, the ending termination of the present participle plural. Okay, and that goes with, do you know the meaning of Ijanatang? Excuse me? Yeah, Bijanatang is knowing clearly, understanding. So, but this is negated, Well, since it's plural, those not understanding, and what they don't understand is Saddhammang. They don't understand the good Dhamma, true Dhamma. And that whole... Well, actually, you see, this whole phrase is qualifying Balanang in the previous line. So long, and that seems to be genitive. That's a genitive. So long is the round of rebirths for the foolish people who do not understand the true Dharma. Yeah, the way we use it in English, some words in English that some structures in English where we use for are better considered than Pali datives. Other cases, it seems to fit into Pali genitive. But as I've said, in Pali, genitive, dative, in certain structures, they flow together. It's somewhat hard to distinguish. Just as ablative, instrumental and ablative tend to flow together. Yeah, it's a present participle. A present participle is really, it functions adjectively. Sometimes present participle standing alone, if there's no other noun, then there's the noun implicit in the present participle, those engaged in such and such an action. But if present participle is used in connection with another noun, then it functions like an adjective describing that noun. So in this case, long is the round of rebirths for the fools who do not understand the true Dharma. Okay, next. Should we go to the next verse or any questions on this? Yeah. 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 It's a short eye, yeah. That's the subject. There's a feminine noun in short eye.
Right.
The endings with short eye can be either feminine or masculine. Endings in long eye, usually they're feminine. There are some which are masculine, as we'll see.
Right.
Right, right. Yeah, because the short I, this noun, rati, it's a feminine noun with a short I. I think it's in lesson one. In fact, page six gives actually this word rati as the example of the declension. It's the feminine short I stem. Okay, let's go on to the next verse. Okay, this is from a very important sutta called the Mahamangala Sutta, the Sutta on Great Blessings. Asevana cha balanam pandita nancha sevana puja cha pujaniyanam etang mangalam uttamam. Okay, here the word orders get inverted because it's verse, so they have to fit it into the meter. So the first, asevana. Sevana means associating with, serving. It's like the English word serve. Okay, so, but now it's negated, asevana. So non-association, in English we say association with people, but in Pali it comes out like association of people. Not but we would have to say not associating with fools. Pandita Anancha Sevana. What is this cha here? And. So it's and associating with or serving the panditas. Pandita is wise people. Puja means worship or offerings, veneration. Puja cha pujaniyanam. Again, this is feminine, this is genitive plural. The worship, or let's say, veneration of those worthy of veneration. Etang, this, the word etang here sums up all three of those steps. Mangalang. Mangalang is something like blessing. And then uttamang means supreme, most excellent. Or highest. They say highest, best. So normally we would say mangalang uttamang. But now this is verse, so for the sake of easy recitation, when the final in mangalang meets with the in uttamang, they join together in sandhi. So the turns into a simple Any questions on this verse? Yeah. 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 No, actually, this is nominative singular because mangalang is neuter. Neuter. Yeah. In the glossary, it gives mangalang. On page 66. So it's neuter. So because that's the subject of a sentence, this is the supreme blessing, the highest blessing. And then uttama is the adjective which goes along with mangalam. Okay. Any other question? Okay, next one. Bahu sachang cha sipancha vinyo cha susikito subhasita cha yavacha etang mangalam uttamang. Okay, the word bahu sachang means literally heard muchness, but is used in Buddhist texts, it means abundant learning, having richness in learning, much learning. And they should have printed this, they should have had, we have the satchang. Instead of using that M with the dot underneath, because it's followed by CH, they should have turned that final M into the N with the squiggle on top. But it doesn't really matter. Bahu sachancha sipancha. Sipa means some craft, a skilled craft, some knowledge of art and science by which one can earn a living. Vinayo means a discipline or code of conduct. Susikito, which is well trained in, or in other words, in which one is well trained, being well trained in a code of moral discipline. Subhasita cha ya vacha. Here, vacha is speech, subhasita, spoken. So, well-spoken speech. Then other suttas, there are some suttas which analyze what is well-spoken speech. Speech which is truthful, not harmful to others, softly and gently spoken, and meaningful. Etang mangalamutamang, this is the highest blessing. Okay, any questions on this? These are really just strings of nouns joined together. Danancha dhammacharyacha. Dana is giving. Dhammacharya is conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. That would be fa-shing. Fa-shing. Dhammacharya. Yes. Yes, fa-shing. Fa-shing. Shing falling to him. Fa. Yeah. Rising tone. Shing. Okay. Fa shing. Fa shing. Fa shing. Okay. Nyataka nancha sangaho. Okay, nyataka, it comes from the root meaning to know. But it means those who are known very, very well. In other words, one's personal relatives. One's relatives, one's family members and relatives. And sangaho. Sangaho here means, the word has many meanings. Here the meaning is something like supporting, benefiting. Let's see what the book is. Yeah, the book gives assistance, protection, kind disposition. So let us say assistance or support to relatives. Anavajani kamani. Here, kamani, of course, means deeds, actions. And anavaja means blameless. So, blameless deeds. This is the highest blessing. Okay. Arati virati papa. Here, arati means, literally, it means not taking delight in. And virati, it's a very closely related word. You could say desistance from. It's related to the word rati, which means delight, enjoyment. Then we have arati, or it gets extended for poetical purposes, for metrical purposes, arati, non-delight. And then vi, the prefix vi has a kind of negative meaning also. Vi plus rati. Stopping, ending delight in, desisting from. Okay, so you say the leaving, abstention from, desisting from evil deeds, or from evil. Papa is evil. Majjhapana cha sanyamo. Majjhapana, here majjha means intoxicating, and pana is drink. And sanyamo means restraining from. So restraining from or abstaining from intoxicating drinks. Then appamado cha dhammesu. Here, diligence or heedfulness in the teachings, in the practice of the teachings. This is the highest blessing. Any questions about these words?
The previous one.
Yeah. Charyata. Yeah. That's a feminine singular. Excuse me? Yeah. Generally, either one knows the word itself, or one could tell from the context if there are like adjectives, a verb. Here, one doesn't have any adjectives or verbs. But when you get familiar with the word charia, you know that it's a feminine singular. Maybe the first time you're not so sure, but once you get acquainted with it. No, I don't think one has charia as a masculine plural. Yeah. I would say definitely here it's genitive. It's the supporting of one's relatives. Supporting of relatives. Okay, next. Garavocha nivatocha santuticha katanyuta. Okay, garavo means respect, reverence, and nivato means, they give the meaning modesty, gentleness, sometimes it has a sense of humility, being a simple person, not pretentious. Okay, so reverence, humility. Santuti, that means contentment, being satisfied with simple things. And normally santuti would end with the short I, but here it's extended to a long I for the purpose of the meter. Santuti cha. Then there's a spelling mistake in this line. Anybody see what it is? No, it's katanyuta. There should be only one T in that first part, not double T. Katanyuta. Yeah, look on the list, the glossary on page 65, second word down. Katanyuta. And this word katanyuta means gratitude. To understand the derivation, kata means what has been done, and this ending nyu, it comes from the root nya. Janati, one knows, and then the n doubles. Katanyu means knowing what has been done. In other words, knowing the favors that others have done for you, plus the abstract ending ta, which I mentioned earlier, like seta ta. So it's the state of remembering the favors and help that others have given one, the things that others have done for one. Then kalena dhamma savanang. This means kalena, in good time, at the right time, listening to the dhamma. At Bodhi Monastery, the good time is Saturdays, Tuesday, Thursday morning, Tuesday evening. This is the highest blessing. Any question? Actually, I think there does come cases where, in the suttas, where the Buddha is on his arms round, and then some inquirer comes up to him when he's going from house to house and asks a question. Then the Buddha says, "This is not the time for teaching the Dhamma. I have entered amongst the houses." Okay, then the next verse. Kanti cha sova chasata samana nancha dasanang. Kalena Dhamma Sakaccha Etang Mangalam Uttamam. Kanti, here it's patience. Normally it has the short I, but here it's extended for metrical purposes. Kanti cha so vachasata. Okay, the word so vachasata, it actually comes from Vacha means speech, and su is a prefix, usually it means good. And so some translators, early translators who didn't really understand the technical use of the term, sometimes translated so vachasata as meaning goodness of speech, being a good speaker. But that's a misunderstanding. What it actually means, su vacha, is being easy to speak to. So somebody is easy to speak to when they accept well-intentioned advice. In other words, they're obedient. What is the obedient, compliant? And so this forms an abstract noun, sovachasata, the state of being easy to speak to, of being amenable to correction. Then samana nancha dasanam. Here dasana means the seeing of ascetics or monks, renunciants, because for Buddhist people to go into the presence of the monks and nuns and to see them is something which is inspiring, inspires faith and confidence. When the monks and nuns are well disciplined. Then kalena dhamma sakaccha. Kalena, at the right time. Here sakaccha means discussion. So at the right time, having dhamma discussion. This is the highest blessing. Yeah. Samanananancha dasanam. Here it does, sometimes it's used in that sense, in the sense of seeing into the nature of things. But here it simply means the seeing of the monks, of the ascetics, of monastics. Here, Samananang is genitive, masculine genitive plural form. So it's the seeing of the ascetics, seeing of the monastics. Excuse me? Well, it's one form of blessing. Excuse me? Yeah. The Buddha, even in some suttas, he says that when there are monks who are well-disciplined, who have highly accomplished in samadhi, in concentration, in prajna, in wisdom, in vimutti, in liberation, even the sight of them is beneficial. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, one has to take things in context. There the Buddha is trying to discourage a disciple who's very attached to the physical presence of the Buddha, so that when he's separated physically from the Buddha, he becomes very upset, dejected, and he feels that even that his life is worthless for as long as he's not able to look on the Buddha. And so then when the Buddha comes to see him, he teaches him, what is the purpose in seeing this putikayang, this vile body? One who sees the Dharma sees me, and one who would see me, who who wants to see me should see the Dhamma. So in that case, to push that monk to the liberating insight, the Buddha discourages him from looking upon, from being attached to his physical appearance, to his physical presence. But it's also the case that the sight of truly well-disciplined, well-accomplished monks, nuns, is something which can inspire great joy, tranquility, happiness, confidence, faith, trust, devotion.
Isn't that how Shariputta?
Yeah.
Asuji.
Not only Sariputta, my own case too. So if my first connection with Buddhism, so to speak, aside from reading some books, this was in the summer 1965. I never saw a Buddhist monk before. I would never have known one. It's possible to see one. But I was with some friends. We were going on a trip from New York to California. And we stopped off after one day of driving. We stopped off at Madison, Wisconsin to spend the night. And the next morning we had some free time, so I just went by myself for a walk on the campus of the University of Wisconsin at Madison. I was just walking along some pond, and I looked up, and there was a building, and then suddenly out of the building there came a tall, professorial-looking person, European-American, and next to him was a short, oriental-looking figure with a robe this color, and they were walking, just walking together, talking, and I looked at that figure, that person walking, and he looked so peaceful, self-possessed, tranquil, happy. And I thought, wow, there must be something in these Buddhism. And that really spurred my interest in Buddhism. Just seeing, they were some distance away. I didn't even go up. I wouldn't have had the nerve to go up to speak to him. But just seeing that person walking tranquilly across the campus, across that part of the campus, was something very inspiring for me. And awaken my serious interest in Buddhism. Then, interestingly, a couple of years later, I became a disciple. And I identified that person in my mind. I thought, that's a Japanese Zen master. So he was wearing an orange-colored robe. I didn't know anything what colored robes monks from different countries wear. Then 2 years or 3 years later, when I went to graduate school, I became friends and then a disciple of a Vietnamese Buddhist monk who was staying in that same graduate school. And he used to tell me every once in a while about some of the high-ranking monks in Vietnam. And one monk name that he mentioned was Thich Minh Chao. And then sometime about a year after we were together, he told me Venerable Thich Minh Chao is coming to the USA. He'll be in Los Angeles. We should go to meet him. And so we went to meet him. We were waiting. He was staying with a Vietnamese family in Los Angeles. We were waiting in the living room. Then after some time, Thich Minh Chao came out. And I looked at that person. I thought, I've seen him before. And it occurred to me, and I asked him, by any chance did you happen to be on the campus of the University of Wisconsin in Madison in July 1965? And he said, yes, I was visiting. At that time there was Richard Robinson, who was a professor of Buddhist studies at the University of Wisconsin, who was established a department of Buddhist studies there. And Thich Minh Chao was the rector or chancellor of the Van Hine Buddhist University in Saigon. And he came to the United States to meet with Richard Robinson. Excuse me? Yeah. Well, this is something one doesn't forget so easily. I'm sure there would have been hundreds of students at the University of Wisconsin who would have seen that monk figure walking across the campus. Don't think any of them are Buddhist monks now. But just I saw him, and that was sort of the trigger that set off that interest. And by the way, that Thich Nhat Hanh, he is the author of a book called The Comparative Study of the Majjhima Nikaya and the Madhyamaka Agama. And interesting, this is not for my boasting, but the one who got that book published by Multi Obanasi Das, the way that happened, I knew a man, an Indian man, in North India, who is, had been a Goenka meditator in the Goenka meditated tradition, and he became a Buddhist. He was originally from a Sikh family, a Punjabi family. And he was friends with the director of Motilal Banasi Das, and this Mr. Jutla, was his name, asked me if I knew any scholarly works on early Buddhism that I could recommend to him for Motilal Banasi Das. Motilal Banasi Das wanted to get some good scholarly works in early Buddhism. Then I thought, remember that work, which I had seen in an, it had been published by some publisher in Saigon. And so I recommended it. And then I recommended it to Mr. Jutla. Mr. Jutla recommended it to the director of Motilal Banasi Das. And then it got published. Okay, so that takes care of that. You want to try at least 15 minutes of working through the further readings? Let us at least try to do, start right off. Okay, maybe we take going by the list. Bhikkhu Chahan, you want to start with?
Chahi.
Yeah.
Dave.
Yeah.
Damehi Samanagato.
Yeah.
Bhikkhu.
Yeah.
Akumeyo. Anjalika Niyo.
Yeah.
Anitaran.
Yeah.
Kunya Ketan.
Lokasa. Yeah.
With six, is this an instrumental? Chami?
Right.
Okay. Should I just go to the or go through?
Maybe try it word for word.
With six,
yeah.
And then O bhikkhu, O monks.
Yeah.
And quality.
Yeah.
That maybe is with also instrumental.
Yeah.
That quality. Samanagato is endowed with.
Yeah.
And then bhikkhu is a monk.
Yeah.
Which is the subject of this.
Right, yeah.
Sentence. Ahuneyo is worthy of offering.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Hohi is.
Right, yeah.
And Bahuneyo is worthy of hospitality.
Yeah. By the way, so there was some Sri Lankan translator years ago who used to translate this. Worthy of hospitalization. Okay, continue.
Worthy of offering.
Yeah.
And then worthy of respectful salutation.
Right. Anjali is that gesture. Anjali.
Oh, Anjali.
Yeah. They call it Japanese, I know, call it gasho. Is there a special Chinese word for that?
No, it's not just simply putting it together.
Yeah, and then
also bowing.
Yeah.
So, 做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一做一 then anuttaram is surpassed.
Yeah.
And then punyaketam.
Yeah.
Seal of merit.
Right.
And then lokasa Data singular for the world.
Yeah, it's actually grammatically it would be genitive. But when we translate it, it's better to put it as for the world.
Okay, but it's actually genitive.
Yeah. Grammatically it's genitive. In other words, what the meaning here is that the sense of the expression, when people in the world make offerings to a monk who's endowed with these qualities, then they get a large accumulation of merit. So the imagery is that of planting a seed in the ground, in a field, and the seed will yield abundant crops, abundant fruit.
So okay. I render as all monks, a monk endowed with six qualities, yeah, is worthy of veneration, worthy of not hospitalization,
of hospitality. Yeah.
Worthy of offering, yeah, worthy of respectful salutation,
yeah,
the unsurpassed field of merit for the world.
Right. Good. Okay, you could try the six.
Katsamehi, yeah, chahi, with which six?
Yeah.
Ida bikave bhikkhu
chakuna
rupam visva neva sumano hoti.
Yeah.
Okay. The ida is here.
Yeah.
All monks and a monk, and chakuna is instrumental with eyes.
Yeah, yeah, with the eye, yeah.
With the eye, and rupam is actually the object,
yeah,
form.
Yeah.
And then visva is having seen.
Right.
And neva is neither or, which actually,
yeah,
later. And sumano, of a happy mind.
Yeah.
Hoti is,
yeah,
dumano.
Yeah.
Happy.
Wait, dumano, unhappy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Unhappy.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet indifferent. And vikarati.
Yeah.
Lives.
Yeah.
Sato, mindful.
Yeah.
Sampajano.
Yeah.
Is thoughtful.
Yeah.
So I wrote in a, here, O monk, a monk having seen form with eyes,
yeah,
is neither happy or unhappy. He lives in indifference, mindfulness, and thoughtfulness.
Yeah, or I would say he dwells equanimous. Okay. Or he dwells with equanimity.
Okay, with equanimity.
Mindful and clearly comprehending. Use adjective forms like mindful, clearly comprehending. Okay. Upekako means with equanimity. It comes from the noun upeka.
It's the same with equanimity, right?
Upeka is equanimity. That's the sort of abstract noun. But then a person who has upeka is said to be upekaka. The ka makes it refer to a person. So it's the person who is equanimous, who has the balanced mind.
So, and then it goes on to sotena.
Yeah.
Sadang sutva.
Yeah.
Pei is just repeating what was said before, so it would be,
yeah,
a monk,
yeah,
having heard sound with ears,
right,
is neither happy,
yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah,
born.
Yeah.
And then next is Ganena.
Yeah.
Gandam.
Yeah.
Gajitva,
right? Yeah. Gajitva.
Gajitva. It's having smell with,
yeah,
nose.
Yeah.
And then the next one is having tasted with tongue.
Having tasted flavor.
Flavor.
With the tongue. Rasang. Rasang is flavor or taste.
Having touched with body?
Yeah. But then you need potabang. potabang is, you say, a tactile object.
I mean,
touched a tactile object.
Tactile
object with the body. You know the word tactile?
Yeah.
Oh. Tactile, it means something that can be touched. Some translators use tangible, something that one touches.
So that sentence ends with, the last one would be having perceived.
Yeah, or vinyaya, I would prefer to use cognize, because perceive ties up with sanya.
Cognized mental phenomena?
Yeah.
A monk?
With manasa.
With the mind.
With the mind. So having cognized some mental phenomenon, we could say some idea, having cognized some idea with the mind.
With the mind. Yeah. Is neither happy or unhappy.
Yeah.
He dwells equanimous.
Yeah.
Mindful and with and clear comprehension
and clearly comprehended
and clearly comprehended.
Yeah.
And in Mexico, with these six qualities, O monks, a monk is worthy of veneration, hospitality, worthy of offering, worthy of respectful salutation. The unsurpassed field of merit for the world.
Right.
I have a question about
yeah.
We only have old
people. Yeah.
So that makes me think that the Anueyo, Kamueyo, Shakueyo, those are all adjectives qualifying the monk.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
And then we have accusatives, Anutaran, Kamutetan.
Yeah. Yeah, I okay. Let me just see. No, it's not. Okay, the sense is endowed with these six qualities, a monk is ahuneo, okay, worthy of gifts, ahuneo, worthy of hospitality, dakineo, worthy of offerings, anjali karaneo, worthy of respectful salutation. You see, all of those are adjectives, so they all get declined as masculine singular. Can you hear me back there with the sound? Okay, but now, anuttarang panyaketang lokasa, it's continuing. It's another descriptive phrase in that same series, but it's because ketang is an independent noun. It's not an adjective form. So that's why it is, and it's a neuter noun. So just in the same way that the monk is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of respectful salutation, he is also the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. But ketang, because it's an independent noun, has to remain as neuter.
Therefore, it is econonymous.
It's nominative, right. It's a nominative singular.
And then,
the monk, in other words, just to short circuit it. The anuttarang is an adjective going with punya ketang. Yeah, it's a nominative form. So we say, endowed with these six qualities, a monk is, amongst other things, an unsurpassed field of merit for the world. And normally, lokasa would have come earlier, lokasa anuttarang punyaketang. But I think this is, it was originally like a recited formula, and it gives a little like flair of elegance to just invert the normal word order.
Is there any dictionary by which whether a word is the gender form is right?
I would recommend that at some point, those who really want to go continue seriously with the study of Pali, eventually you'll have to get the Pali Text Society's Pali English Dictionary. I think it does when there's words which you can't immediately identify from the form. They will specify whether it's masculine or, say, neuter, feminine or masculine. There's actually now the Pali Text Society is issuing a new Pali English dictionary. So far, only one volume has come out, which goes from A through K, the K's. So I think probably there will be three volumes, and it's more detailed. It's, of course, it improves on the old one, which was compiled in the 1920s. But it might be too detailed for relative beginning Pali, and also it only goes up, covers first few letters. The first volume is already out. This is compiled by Margaret Cohn. I don't know whether she's already compiled the other volumes and they just have to be typeset and printed. It's from the Pali Text Society. Actually, it's not all that, relatively speaking, not all that expensive. I think it's $30 for that big dictionary. C-O-N-E, Margaret Cohn. If you look at the website of the Pali Text Society, it should be listed.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
It's a matter of meaning. Manasa dhamma.
Yeah.
Manasa could be translated as thought.
I would say mind is better. Because thought... Yeah, no, mind is better. Because cognizes with is mind. Generally, the thought is an object of mind or a function of mind. But, I mean, this is some degree is a matter of taste, personal taste. Yeah. They're used in different contexts. Generally, citta indicates, let us say, mind taken as the center of personal experience, that which is endowed with one's personal qualities, that which one has to know and understand, that which one has to train and tame and master, that which has to be liberated. That is all citta. Then manas is mind as a door of action, then you, in that case, you have kaya, body, vachi, speech, and mano, mind. So one performs deeds with the body, one utters words with speech, and one thinks thoughts with mano, with mind. A door of action. It's part of the triad of body, speech, and mind. Then also mano occurs as the sixth door of sense, as it does here. It's the sixth of eye, ear, nose, tongue, physical body, to which one experiences touch sensations. Then mano is that with which one experiences ideas, thoughts, concepts. And why you have the form instrumental manasa, I don't remember. Did the book explain that? It didn't explain that. Excuse me? It didn't say anything. That's because it's an instrumental form which comes from the original Sanskrit form is manas. But you never get manas alone in Pali when it's instrumental. I'm sorry, when it's nominative, it would be mano. But when it forms instrumental, it becomes manasa. The S reappears, but it gets the instrumental ending, the long A. There are a few nouns, very few like that. Another one is chetas, which also means something like mind. You get it in compounds. Cheto vimuti. Liberation of mind. But when you have chetas alone, we get the instrumental form chetasa with mind. But here it's mind very somewhat in an emotional sense, almost heart, or genitive form chetaso, of the heart. Yeah, yeah. Manas is the Sanskrit form. Also in Sanskrit, when you get it in compounds, then it would turn into mano also. But you never get a form manas standing alone in Pali. Any further questions?
Yes.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Vinyaya.
It is a gerund. It's a good question. I don't recall that we've covered all of the gerunds in the book, that the book has yet so far covered all of the gerunds. But there are different ways to make the gerund. Two most common ways with the termination tva. This is the most common way. Or dispa is somewhat also a, what do you call this, irregular form, dispa. Sutva, okay, sutva. You just take su plus va. Gaiva, to smell. Saiva, to taste. Pusipa, to touch. But another way to form this gerund is with the termination ya. Fifty-two has some explanation. There are also gerunds formed by adding ya. And these are particularly common with verbs which have a prefix or prefixes added to the root. So here we have V plus the root nya plus ya gives vinyaya. We would have to perceive would be sanyaya, to take, or having taken adaya, having clung or clinging, upadaya. Generally, often when there is a prefix, we have the ending ya. In Sanskrit, always when there's a prefix, you have to have ya. Without a prefix, always tva form, or some variant on tva. But in Pali, it's not so rigid, the distinctions. Okay, I think we have to stop now.